Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
This is 45 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Oh, welcome back into the House of Mystery. I'm Al Warren. Mr. Dave Martino. You see, you were pausing. You weren't sure what it was going to be, Rose or a little Pelula or whatever that
was. Yeah, what name? Will it be today?
Dollarama Dave.
Dollarama Dave. That's right.
Yeah. He's on speed
dial. Dollar Tree.
Yeah. He's on speed dial, and they call him every time they get movies in that are really bad so he can run in there and spend a dollar on a whole bad movie. Like, even the dollar store can't get rid of it. They have to call Dave.
Yeah, they call me. And sometimes they have digital, too.
Oh, my God.
For the $1.25, wow. DVD, Blu-ray, and digital.
Geez, they must be really sad, sad movies. Yeah. Not even worth a buck.
No. No.
Things are looking up. How many thousands of those do you have now?
I have hundreds. But
hundreds.
I have in the hundreds, but I know people, I know collectors who are in the thousands. Well, I haven't gone over the deep end yet.
That's only because your wife won't let you.
No, it's true.
And when you say, like, when you say collector, I'm sorry, I'm going to burst in. Does that, it's just somebody who's collecting movies from the Dollar Tree or movies in general?
Movies in general. Physical media.
I didn't know if there was like a subsect of collectors that are like, I'm strictly a Dollar Tree.
Well, they might be. They might be.
Would be one of them.
Yeah.
Well, I think, you know.
Some decent stuff.
Yeah. Well, you can get things anywhere, right? I mean.
Yeah.
Dollarama, Dollar Tree.
You never know.
You know, Walmart must be a big day on the weekend for you.
So a lot of those stores aren't caring, you know, much for physical media anymore. You have to get it online or from boutiques.
You see, Jennifer, what it is there's people like Dave. They're into the, as they call it, physical medium.
You know, I will say I owned a comic book store for a while, so I understand the collector mentality. And I have a friend who's a big horror collector. But he is absolutely obsessed with collecting VHS.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Like, that's his gig.
There are people who still, especially movies that haven't made it to disc or streaming.
Yeah, because they're that bad.
Yeah.
Well, and because they're there, you have to have them. Because,
yeah.
And yet, you know, it was weeks ago when Dave ran to the Dollarama to get the Tonya Harding movie for a buck.
Yeah.
And he still hasn't watched it.
No.
But that's a great movie.
It's on the list. I'm going to watch it.
Well, there you go. It's on the list. Are you scheduled to watch all these? Like,
I watched Bad Moms last night.
That's not something to brag about on the radio, no, Dave.
I was going
to
say, you know.
He was so proud.
Yeah. He's he's such a nice guy. I hate to break it to him.
Anyways. I mean, Al makes fun of me when I watch Roadhouse. So this time was bad.
Well,
I mean, come on.
Yeah. See, I'm just trying to even things out a bit.
I mean, I won't judge you. I love a lot of garbagey TV and movies and stuff. Like, I have seen Pretty Little Liars in its entirety 4 times.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
What?
So, yeah, like, I won't really judge the Bad Moms thing that much, but a little bit.
For me, it's not, I'm not judging. I mean, hey, you like what you like. I watch a lot of really bad stuff, too. But I'm talking about running out and buying it. That's what I'm talking about. Not about, because why do you have to own it? Because even when you watch Bad Moms, or let's say the Tonya movie and stuff like that, that's it then. It'll go back in its case, and it's something else where you have to dust every month, whenever you clean.
But here's the thing. It's the same thing with books, though. Like,
it's true.
Like, I just like to look at my bookshelf sometimes. Like, it gives me, like, such...
Yeah.
Calming vibes. I own these things.
Yeah.
And sometimes I will buy it like a book on like a Kindle, like the ebook, and then I'll buy the physical copy because, you know, you just never know if you're going to want to leaf through it, underline important passages.
That's right. Well, I'm running on the shelf.
I know, my husband's always like, wait, you have this on audio, ebook, and a hardcover? Like, how much did you spend just to have, like, 3 versions of the same book?
Everyone wants Jennifer as a fan, because she's going to buy all of your media.
I know, people are like, oh, didn't you also get a free copy from the publisher? And I'm like, yeah.
It's not the same.
I know, it's not the same. It has like a slightly different cover.
Yeah. You are the grand dam of horror, right? You are the most beautiful horror writer going. You're famous. Everyone loves you. You're on top of the world.
Yes.
It's like royalty in
Thank
horror.
Thank you.
Right?
That was lovely to say.
And Gordon. I mean, what more could you ask for, right? Is there another woman in horror even close?
Oh, no, there's plenty. There's plenty of people.
Who?
Oh, I'm just going to start naming, like, every female horror writer, Catronia Ward, Sina Paleo, honestly, everybody. Yeah, the genre is blossoming with amazing female horror writers these days. Yeah, I love it when women start writing about freaky things. Because I grew up, you know, on strictly Stephen King, Dean Koontz, and Clive Barker. Like, there weren't female horror writers that I could go to my local bookstore and, like, see them, or their books weren't on... like the spinner rack at the grocery store and the little mass market paperbacks that I used to obsess about. Except for like V.C. Andrews, but even V.C. Andrews was being ghostwritten by a man, so.
What's different about a woman horror writer to you? Is it the approach? Is there something more sensitive about a female horror writer?
Not necessarily, but I do think for women, there are certain things that are more horrifying to us than like a man. Like, so, I'm generalizing here, but so sometimes I dabble in a little bit of like body horror poetry, which I love to do. And I tend to write about like gross medical things that would normally only happen to a woman. Yeah, it's a niche subject.
The whole horror community, do you think it's something that's booming at this time?
I do think it's booming. And, you know, I've talked to my agent, I've talked to other authors, and everyone just keeps saying, you know, horror is having a moment right now. It's having a moment. But it does seem to keep building and building. So I'm hoping, you know, as a genre, it's getting a little bit more respected. I get far fewer people saying to me, oh, I don't read horror these days. When I, you know, when I first started writing, they were just like, why are you writing horror? Like, ew. Write a romance.
Yeah.
Like, you know, even my mom, like, she's always just like, you should just write a nice book that people will want to read. I'm like, well, they want to read my not nice books. Some of them do.
Do you think that's still a thing in general? People in public kind of go, well, females shouldn't write horror or gross things or murder or things like that?
Yeah, you know, I don't see it very often. I see it a little bit with people I personally know who can't still wrap their brain around the fact that I write horror or I write crime and murder books and I like these disgusting things because they the people in my real life know me as, you know, I'm a ballroom dance instructor. I love the foxtrot. I have a cute little dog. I wear dresses all the time in bright colors. And then they read my work and they're just like, oh, something must have happened to her.
Yeah, who hurt you?
Who hurt you like this?
I don't sort of, you know, because to me, a boy and a girl.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work. If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Step onto the legendary clay courts of Roland Garros, where the world's best players battle it out at the French Open for a chance to win a Grand Slam title. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV live in HD. See the action unfold as legends fight for glory and new rivalries emerge. Daily live coverage begins Monday, May 20th, with match replays on demand so you never miss a moment. From the first serve to the final point, Roland Garros promises unforgettable moments and new chapters in tennis history. Stream now with Tennis Channel Plus to be there when it happens.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well,
HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Well, the same. You know what I mean? Like, where we, I don't see any difference, so I don't know why a woman couldn't write anything that a man could write in any type.
Exactly.
You know, horror, crime, fiction, anything.
Right.
Like, it's just.
Yeah, I absolutely agree.
It's your mind and your heart. It's not about your sex. So in general, I don't actually understand that, because I still hear a lot of people say things like that. Or even when I just did like four different book signings here early in August, late July, and I still have people coming up and going, you know, oh, and it's funny because they'll say, oh, I could never read this type of book.
Yeah.
Oh, why? Oh,
why?
It's just so, it's so awful. Okay.
Okay. No, so don't read it.
Well, I just want to say, next.
Yeah. I know. There's nothing weirder than being at like a convention or a show or even like a book signing at a bookstore, and people come up to you and literally just tell you like, oh, so this is like dark and scary. Yikes. I hate books like that. Or like, I would never read this. And I'm like, okay, thank you. Yeah. Do people actually read these books? Do you actually make money? Like, I'm like, you wouldn't just like walk up to a random person, like a lawyer, and be like, do you actually make money doing this?
Like, yeah.
Do people actually want your advice?
Yeah, go to their job and tell them what to do with their job.
Yeah, go to the Dollar Tree and say, do people actually buy these movies?
Buy these movies? Really?
Or do they just use them as coasters? Yeah. Are they using them for a craft
People
project?
Don't actually watch this, do they? Do they? Oh, my God.
Nobody watches Bat Moms.
Well, no. Somebody.
No. <wants. Right.
laughs> I don't know.
Sorry, Dave.
I think I'm just one of those things that he just buys and they're still in the wrapper. They'll be there in 10 years, still in the wrapper. The cat will be sitting on top.
They depreciate in value if you open
them.
Yeah,
that's right. They're not their original.
They'll go down to like 75 cents.
Oh, they're like precious.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see that.
Golem.
Yeah. Just lays in the basement with all these.
Of course,
see, of the House of Mystery.
We're starting to form a new horror book here. You see, it's about Dollarama Dave in the basement with his deals. Yeah.
Oh my God, with his deals. Yeah.
And he lays there and obsesses. He's just like Silence of the Lamb, right? Someone comes to the door. You just like it when he opens the door.
Do you want to keep the wrapper on or it gets the hose?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Oh, there you go.
Something like that.
Make a story.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and that brings it up.
I'm writing it down right now.
By all means.
Got to do a quick outline.
Just, this could work. Actually, so with today's world, what makes a good book to you? Because, like, there's been so much horror from Frankenstein years ago to Anne Rice to now. What is a good horror to you? Like, how do you explain what a good horror is?
Oh, you know, and I think that's going to be subjective for everybody. Right. For me, I don't know. It's hard to say because I read so much horror and I read so much crime fiction. I just really like the unexpected. And I also really, the past year or so, I've been really, really reading a lot of queer horror and writers that up until a few years ago didn't really have a seat at the table. They weren't being published as much. So
queer horror.
Yeah, like,
ooh,
to me.
Ick.
You would hate that. Ooh. You're like, that sounds scary and gay. And I'm like, that's me. Oh.
They don't know that.
Now do you consider your horror? Do you consider it more on the extreme level? Or do you do more quiet?
No. Definitely more quiet. Definitely more quiet. I used to call myself just like a gothic horror author, or, and then other people would call me literary horror. I definitely, what I like to write, whether it's a story or a novel, I like to write that slow, simmering unease, where you don't know if the characters are being truly haunted or if maybe they're having a really intense nervous breakdown. Like, is it schizophrenia or is it a ghost?
Well, that's very popular.
But when I dabble in, yes, it is. And I love it. And I've always loved it. So, yeah. But yeah, I'm kind of a baby when it comes to like violence. Like not seeing it on a movie or reading it in a book, but like me physically writing it, I'm kind of a baby. So my horror tends to be a little bit more subdued, but then aspects of some body horror kind of go in there too. Like so.
So more of the mental suspense of the issue and stuff. So what is the Japanese box?
So the Japanese box is a collection of several stories and a poem that, you know, the story itself, the Japanese box, kind of the flagship story, started actually as a personal essay about a night that I was, when I was a little kid, that my dad showed me all of the stuff that he brought home from the Korean War. And he had this Japanese box that he got when he was on leave in Japan. And he was like, someday I'll give this to you. So I started writing this essay about my dad and about me and about, you know, what it was like to grow up with, you know, a mom with mental illness and a father with really incredible PTSD. And then I realized it was so personal that scared me so much that I was like, I have to add a ghost to this. I have to add something that makes it not real as my way of like releasing this information out into the world. So that story, which started as a personal essay, ended up turning into like a slow simmering unease about a girl being haunted by her dead twin.
what draws you to put so much person in it, like so much of your own feeling?
Yeah, you know, I've spent a lot of the past few years taking a lot of grief writing courses and memoir courses, and I taught a course on writing about generational trauma. And I think because I've done so much of my own like personal self-discovery, I've realized how unique every single person in the world is. I mean, I know that sounds stupid to say, but like only I can write the horror or the work that I'm writing. So the more of me that goes in it, the more I can guarantee that nobody's read something like that before, because nobody has had my experiences. And maybe I'm lazy and I know my own story, so it's easy to keep telling it.
But how do you let go of that?
It's easier than research.
Yeah, but how can you let go of that? You know, it's not like you're just doing the essay for yourself and you've got it and you work through the feelings and by writing it. You actually put it out for anybody in the world to read.
Yeah, that's the scary part. So honestly, The Japanese Box and Other Stories was the first book that I've released that I was absolutely petrified for it to be out in the universe, because I kept thinking, like, if somebody hates this, this is the closest to me as a person that I've done for public consumption. So I'm like, if somebody hates it, that means they hate me. And then I just said, you know, I just like took a swan dive and was like, fine, go for it, release it into the world. It helped having a publisher who really was behind the project and believed in it. And then it helped having people I really love and respect read it early and blurbed it. And so it made me less scared to put it out there in the universe.
Right. Well, you've gone into your past consciously, but have you ever been surprised by anything that you've written that has come out unconsciously, maybe after you've read the first draft?
I definitely have. And I know I've used similar, we'll say like metaphor in certain stories. And it wasn't until like later on, I was like looking back and going, oh, that's like a common theme that I'm working with,
right,
and working through. And honestly, sometimes it's happened like when I'm mid interview, like about a book, and an interviewer asks like a really important question because they read the book and they're like, did you do this consciously? And I'm like, holy crap, no, I didn't. But that makes me seem much smarter than I thought I was. Thank you.
That's when you pretend you know what they're talking about.
Yes. I'm like, oh, yeah, that was exactly what I wanted it to be.
In fact, I wrote that for
you're
you.
You're right. I am a genius.
I wrote it just for you to ask.
Yeah.
Boy. Well, so how does something like this, when you put this together and you put it out there and it's finished now and you look back, how does that change you?
I mean, I think anytime, and this goes for any kind of artist or creative type, when you put the work out there, you are letting you, it's an act of trust. Like, you trust that it will be fine. So I really think, you know, every project, you start to trust yourself more, you trust your fans more. So the relationship is growing, even if it's like you just with the public in general. Like, I have to believe in myself, and I believe in myself more every time.
Hmm. Well, and if it fails, you could always, it'll be at the Dollar Tree.
Yeah. And then Dave can buy it for a dollar. Or maybe $1.25 if it comes with comes with the ebook.
I'll be right there.
It comes with the ebook. It comes with, yeah, it's the paperback, it's a hardcover, it's the ebook, and the audiobook for $1.25.
Oh boy, he'll get six. Oh.
I'm there.
One for each room.
Yeah. This one doesn't just have to live in the basement. You know,
this is the bathroom copy.
I was just going to say, this one goes in the bathroom.
The best place to read.
No, I put all my books in bathrooms. That's all I do.
Yeah.
That's your marketing strategy.
You know what? It's not doing too bad for me.
It's the quietest room in the house.
People laugh, but you know what? Everybody's house I go to, I just leave them in the bathroom. I carry them with me.
Do you put them in, like, bathrooms at, like, bus stations?
Everywhere. Bus stations, shopping malls, restaurants.
McDonald's.
Even if I don't eat there, I go in and drop it off. Yeah.
No,
doctor's offices.
This is a grassroots marketing.
Yeah, and you know, it's not doing too bad. You know, my numbers are okay. Have you ever started a story like this or a story and it kind of, like, when you, how is this? When you get a beginning of a story and you're going to write about it and you start putting it down on paper, you have some idea of where it's going to go or what you want to say to people or kind of what the story is, kind of a basic premise. But by the time you finish that, has it ever been completely different?
Yeah, my book, Pretty Ugly, which I think I was on your show talking about it a couple years ago. I went into writing Pretty Ugly thinking it was going to be a rom-com about the end of the world where people's flesh was rotting off their body because of a terrible disease. And I, for some reason, I thought that was going to be really funny. This was before COVID. So I thought, hilarious. A global pandemic that's killing everybody, but these two wacky kids are going to fall in love. And as I was writing it, it definitely changed completely into this like really kind of beautiful story about healing childhood trauma. And it still took place at the end of the world where people's bodies were rotting off. But it did lack the comedy of the rom-com that I thought I was going to be writing.
Yeah.
And my husband just kept saying, like, I thought this was supposed to be funny when he was, like, reading my early drafts. And I'm like, don't you think it's kind of funny? And he's like, no. No. It's actually really sad and kind of disgusting. He's like, I love it, but he's like, it's just not the book that you pitched to me. When I was just like, here, read my rom-com.
Yeah.
Because I'm a kind of a pantser. So going into something, it can easily change. It can very easily change. Yeah. Like, I'm working on a project right now that I can say this because it doesn't resemble this at all anymore. I wanted to do like a female American Psycho, but set in the ballroom dance world. And I can tell you that it is not that at all anymore. It is still takes place in the ballroom dance world and there are murders, but it is not about a female psychopath. Mainly because my agent was like, do not make your main character a psychopath. Do not make her a murderer. No. And I'm like, what if she just murdered a couple people? And she's like, please don't. Please don't do that. I want her to be likable. I'm like, she's pretty likable, even as a killer.
Yeah. Well, you know, you can always have her boyfriend work at the Dollar Tree, and he's killing people every time someone comes in and buys something. You know, buys it.
If they don't take his movie recommendations,
he goes after them.
Kills them out back by the dumpster.
Right. Oh, terrible. Do you ever put a purpose or some sort of meaning in your books?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think because so much of me is in the books, it would, I can't say, no, there's no purpose or meaning in the books at all. I do write a lot about mental illness and struggling with reality and past trauma and healing from that, or trying to heal from that, but, you know, kind of not being able to because it's a horror novel. So obviously wackiness ensues. But yeah, I do tend to write about like grief, trauma, mental illness, ghosts, drownings.
So the fun stuff.
Yeah.
All the fun stuff, alcoholism. You know, people are just like, why do you write about these things? I'm like, have you met my family? Like, almost all of my female relatives are schizophrenic. Like, hello? It's got to come out somewhere. I can't afford therapy.
We were just talking about stories change, you know, how your stories change. And I was just wondering, what do you think drives that change? Is it the characters?
Oh, it is the characters. It is the characters. There's, you know, I remember when I was writing my very first book, my debut novel, Beautiful, Frightening, and Silent, I was typing away, and then my main character, Adam, made a choice. I can't say it because it's a spoiler. He makes a choice, and he made the wrong choice. I mean, the right choice for the book, but it wasn't at all what I thought was going to come out of my fingers as I was typing. And the second I typed it, I screamed. I was like, no! And my husband ran in and he thought I saw a mouse or something. And he was just like, what's going on? And I was like, Adam just blah, 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 blah. And he's like, okay. And I'm like, and he shouldn't have. And he's like, well, just delete it. And I'm like, I can't now. It's on the page. It happened. He made that choice. He made the wrong choice. I'm like, now nothing's going to go well for him.
So are these characters, how do you experience them?
You know, remember when I said all of my relatives were schizophrenic? No. So I went to school. This is a long-winded answer. I went to school for theater. That's what I went to college for. So I did a lot of character development for every character I played, whether it was a scene or an entire play or anything. So I always start there. Like I'll usually have a rough idea of I hate to use the word plot because it's not even that sometimes, but like an idea, a concept. And then I just try to figure out who's there, like who are my players. And then I just spend time in my head figuring out everything out about them. And I always start with what are their five core memories of their life so far? Like if they were dying, what are the five things that would flash in front of their eyes before they died? What are the things that shaped them? And I start there. And then sometimes the story just starts working itself out from there. When you figure out what is the most important thing to a person, what is the most heartbreaking thing that ever happened to them? When were they the most scared? What is the worst thing they think they've done in their life? And then, you know, if it's going well, the book starts writing itself. And if it's not going well, then I haven't figured out really who they are yet. Because once I know them, it's easier to figure out what they would do.
Do you hear your characters? I'm just trying to find out if you're hearing voices.
I'm not hearing voices. But I do. Like, but at night before I go to bed, I will, like, tell myself the story of, like, their lives or even the story of the book or the story in my head over and over again until I fall asleep. And when I get to a point where I don't know what happens, I go right back to the beginning and I start again, tell myself everything I know. And eventually I get past that point where I don't know what's going to happen and the story just happens. So it's almost like I don't hear them per se, but I do see them like a movie in my head. And then I have to figure out, you know, how to describe what I'm seeing.
Does that happen? Does that happen to you when you're driving or?
No. Okay.
Just curious. I would make stay off the roads in that part of the world.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say, I mean, luckily I work at home.
At the end of the day, when you do a book and you put it out there, what's the most important thing for you to happen?
Honestly, it's hearing back from readers about their experience, especially if it's positive. If you have a negative experience with my books, please don't personally email me and tell me. Thank you.
Yeah, let's just give Dave email address. That's what I do.
That's what Al does.
Yeah. But no, like so for the Japanese box, which just came out August 1st, I was really thrilled. I have some fans that who are just so supportive and so incredible, and they've reached out to me with their experience reading it, how much they loved it. And I'm like, oh, please leave a review on Amazon. Like, I can't copy and paste your private email into the... But yeah, just connecting with your readers on an emotional level and not just like, oh, I loved it, it scared me. Because, I mean, that's all well and good. I want to hear that too. But when I hear from, even if it's just one person, that they tell me what the work meant to them and how it moved them, then that's what I want.
Must be exciting. I was going to say, you got Josh Melman wrote a spiel for you, right? And I had to sleep with him for him to do one for me.
I will say the day I love Josh, we're friends. And when I said, hey, will you read my book? And if you don't hate it, could you blurb it? He was like, yeah, I'll definitely do that. And then I didn't hear back from him for a while. And I'm like, oh, he read it and he hated it. And he's too embarrassed to mention it to me. He put it in his bathroom. He put it in the cat's litter box. And then one day he texted me and he was just like, oh, I'm about to start reading your book right now. And I was like, I'm going to throw up. I was so nervous. I was so nervous because I'm just like, what if he hates it? He's one of my favorite authors in the world. Why did I give it to him? He's going to know I'm terrible and stupid and crazy. And then as he was reading it, he was like messaging me while he was reading it, his favorite lines. I love this part, blah, 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 blah. So like that entire day, it was just like such an emotional roller coaster for me because I was just like, he's going to hate it. And I'm like, holy crap, he doesn't hate it. And he said in a message to me, and I'll never forget it, it like changed my life. He said, this book makes me want to be a better writer.
Wow.
And I'm like, well, you're like the best writer I know. So that's crazy. Yeah. So he was very generous and lovely. And wow. he gave me a really spectacular blurb. And then again, in our messages, he's like, blurbs are so weird. He's like, what I really just want to say in all caps is, I effing loved this book.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, well, you can say that.
Yeah.
That's fine. You can say that.
So he thought he was sending it to Stephen King, that's all.
Yeah, he was just like, oh, wait, oh, no,
oh, wrong person, sorry.
Oh, sorry.
I thought this
was not meant for you.
Whoops, sorry. Never mind.
Yeah. Never mind. What I wanted to say to you was great effort.
Yeah, great effort. Keep up the good work.
Keep up the good work.
Well, that's good. But I think I'd be happy with that. I mean, he's on top of the world right now in horror. And do you ever think of your stuff as do you ever want any of your work to become like a movie or something on Netflix or some streaming service? You ever come across that?
Yeah, I do want that, especially honestly, like my debut novel, Beautiful, Frightening, and Silent. I just always think, because it's three characters and most of it takes place like in an old house, and I was just like, it would make such a great independent film. Because you don't need a huge cast. You don't need a big budget. It's very claustrophobic and atmospheric at the same time. So I always picture that book as a movie. Because I think, it would be the easiest to film because it doesn't involve people's body parts rotting off their... So we wouldn't need a makeup artist.
Yeah, smell-o-rama, scratch and sniff on...
Oh my God. Scratch and sniff. So this is now the second time Scratch and Sniff has come up in my life in the less than a week. So now I feel like I have to be on the lookout for the third time. On my podcast, I said I wanted to do a Scratch and Sniff episode where we would like mail out Scratch and Sniff stickers to our loyal viewers and be like, now it's time. We're drinking coffee. You know what to do. Scratch and sniff. And my co-host was like, that is a terrible idea.
Yeah.
Please don't bring that up again.
I don't know.
But you just said scratch and sniff, and now I'm thinking maybe that's
a
sign.
I like it. I don't know. Well, you see, I'm in the old movie era right now, and old TV shows, because I'm writing stuff in the 60s. So that's all I'm watching is 1950s and 60s horror, noir, science fiction.
I love
that's
it.
All that's on my TV and game shows. That's all that I do 24/7. I know it. Some people think I'm weird. Well, I am, but that's, but you think the thing is, it's so important to get into the era of what you're writing about, you know, what's important, the jokes. Because every time they say and do something or mention a name and I don't know it, I've got to find out who it is. Why do they all laugh about this person? What's the joke? What's going on? Because that's what you incorporate into the, to make it,
make it real.
It's real. It's that time. It's important and stuff like that. But they had, they were trying that for a while in the 50s or 60s. I'm not sure which now, where they were doing the smell-o-rama.
I remember, like, so I used to be completely obsessed with, like, so when I was a kid, Nick at Night, Nickelodeon, after, like 9 p.m. or 10 p.m. at night, all they did was show, like, old TV shows from the 50s and 60s. And even as a child, I was a total insomniac, so I would just, like, stay up and be like, I'm watching, like, Car 54, Where Are You? And, you know, just, like, really random bad shows. I'm like, it's not all Bewitched and I Dream a Genie. There were some clunkers out there, but I loved them. So I think that's probably what like shaped my like absolute love of like the 50s and 60s aesthetic. It's how I dress, like it's just, I love it.
They knew how to display something, how to get an effect. You know, they knew how to do it with a lot less, you know, of the special effects that we have now are computerized. They were able to create an emotion with just a look, a feel, an angle.
Yeah, with lighting, with shadows. Yeah. Oh, like now I'm just like, oh, I want to rewatch my favorite movie, Laura.
but it's true. But so that's important to me. And so when you are putting together a scene in one of your books, how is it that you make it become real?
Again, I start with the emotion of the characters. And sometimes I try to find music or a song that embodies what they're feeling. Like, again, like, so in my brain, it's like, if this were a movie and there was no dialogue, just watching people go through their day-to-day lives, no dialogue, what would that soundtrack be? And I figure out that song, and then I'll play that song over and over again in my head. And I watch my characters in my head doing the things that happen in between the scenes of the book. Like, just like when it's not the plot, when it's how they get ready for work, how they walk down the street. And then I just try to ride that scene, that not scene, that them walking to work, them walking down the street, them going to the store, into whatever's happening, like in the book itself. And to me, that makes it feel very real for me. And I think, again, this comes back to, like, I went to school for theater. The person who was the head of our program would, you know, before class some days, he would just sit in his office and he would, like, watch everybody get out of their car and walk into the building. And he would talk about how we as people are our most interesting when nobody knows, like, when we don't know we're being watched. So he would kind of shape our class that day based on what he saw of our mood, our body language as we were just walking to the building. So that's what makes my characters and my scenes feel real for me, is I think about what they're doing right before the scene, the things that are supposedly not important.
He was probably a creep and he was touching himself while he was watching.
No, he was lovely. I know. Every time I like say that story, people are like, that is so weird. And I'm like,
Norman Bates.
I'm like, no, he was actually very lovely. Yeah. And he was in his office with like his mother, who he had married. And then he was like, mother, look how interesting my students are. Mother, look at them. Look at them, mother. And then he would hold her up to the window. Oh, look at Jennifer walking from her car. It looks like she had a bad day at the bookstore.
She looks like a whore.
She looks like a whore today.
I could see.
Why is her lipstick smeared? What was she doing right before she got here?
Oh, mother, stop it.
Stop it. Stop it, mother. She's a nice girl. This went
mother,
off the rails.
What have you done? What have you done?
I
can see it now. It's taken off. This is a new series going on.
Yeah, I'm not going to write the Dollar Store Dave story anymore. I'm going to write this one.
Well, I mean, I would do the Dollar Store Dave one anyway, just in case.
Maybe combine the two.
Have it as the opening act.
Somehow.
I mean, you know, you got to have Dollar Store Dave sits in his car, his old Pinto, beat up Pinto outside the park.
And the backseat is filled with DVDs. Yeah.
And he's watching people go in and out of the store. Oh.
And he's like, oh, she reminds me of that scene in Hello, Mary Lou, Prom Night 2. And then he, like, he sifts through the backseat and he pulls out, like, the DVD copy, still wrapped in plastic, of course.
Yeah.
And he rips it open. Yeah. He's like, I'm going to watch you tonight.
He rips it open with his teeth and then he starts to breathe heavy like Mel Gibson. get an old portable DVD player.
In the car.
Yeah. In the car. I have to watch you right now.
I can see it.
I need it
now.
That
would be really good. I think this is turning into something really, you know.
It's going to be real.
This could be a special. Now write that down and send it to Josh.
Yeah. Yeah. Josh, I have this great idea.
And all of a sudden, everything's blocked.
Yeah. Like, that's weird. We're not friends anymore on Facebook.
I've been blocked. Deleted and blocked. I don't know what's going on. So where do you see yourself going? You're not going to write romantic comedies, obviously. So how far do you want to go with horror? Or do you want to go into another area?
I mean, so I feel like I have horror stories still inside of me that I want to tell. I have several, like, crime stories, like crime adjacent, you know. I jokingly called it to somebody, a friend of mine. I was like, it's like, I kind of want to write these book club books, but instead of it being like wine moms just drinking, it's like wine moms drinking, but then there's a murder, and then there's this, or then there's like a serial killer. And they're like, that's not really a book club book if you keep adding these gross things to it. So, yeah, I think, you know, my wheelhouse is always going to tend to be darker. So horror, crime. And even if I dabbled in memoir, I still, like, the personal essays I write have a lot of, like, horror imagery in them. So they still fit in the horror place, horror universe.
Yeah, it's interesting.
And that universe is the, like, oh, what happened to you as a child? Your parents should have hugged you more.
What do you want people to get out of your writing?
That's such a great question. And I'm like, I love that, like, we have this fun conversation, we're laughing and we're joking, and then you ask these, like, really questions.
It's the best way. So what you do wake I them up.
Yeah, where I'm like, oh yeah. No.
I do it on purpose.
Oh no, you want me to be vulnerable. You're like Barbara Walters.
What type of a tree would you be?
I know. Oh God. So what do I want people to get out of my work? Because my work tends to be on the emotional side, I would like people to realize that they are not as alone as they probably think they are. That's my touchy-feely answer.
Okay.
But it is true.
Who have you killed in your books or tortured from your real life?
Oh my gosh.
We won't tell anyone.
Oh, I will say, so I have a work in progress right now that, like, the one that I originally said was going to be American Psycho in a ballroom dance world. It still exists in the ballroom dance world, and I will say maybe some former employees at, like, the Fred Astaire I worked at for a while, a million years ago. Maybe some of them. Maybe an ex of mine might die. <Yeah. laughs> Or somebody similar to them. But that being said, there's a character based on my husband, and I have done, like, really, I've made him not a nice person, and he was reading it, and he's just like, really? Really? And I'm like, what? I had to make it not exactly you. He's like, but this scene was exactly how we met, and then all of a sudden I'm doing something creepy. I'm like, well, yeah.
Yeah, we have your husband on the other line right now, so it's...
He's going to be like, yeah, I really wish you hadn't named me blah, blah, blah in that book. He knows nothing is off limits.
Well, that's the whole idea if you're married to a writer, you know. Anything can happen, you know.
Yeah.
So how does this world affect you when you're writing?
Oh, my God.
I mean, because it seems to me the last, we can say, almost 10 years, it's been getting more bizarre as it goes. And lots of weird things going on and weird stories and everything going on from politics to you name it. And with all of that wild stuff going on, do you think that affects your, you know, your emotion to write, or do you think it makes it darker or lighter, or do you think,
for me, I think it makes me darker, and it also makes what I'm searching out to read and like consume with my eyeballs, so like movies and TV shows, it's everything gets darker for me, because I don't know why, but I've always found things like true crime documentaries or true crime books to be very relaxing for me. It's how for many years, like since I was in high school, I dealt with a lot of anxiety. Like I would just go like, I'm just going to watch a murder documentary and I'm going to feel better, because I know it's completely messed up and not healthy, but I think it's because like when I get really anxious, if I watch something or read something that's really dark and horrible, part of me goes, see, it's not that bad. Sure, the world is on fire, literally and figuratively. Things are not going as great. There's a plague. There's all of these things. But at least there's not currently in my town a plague of vampires who are killing people every night. Or there's currently in my town, knock on wood, not a serial killer who snatches women on their way to their mailboxes that are at the end of their very long, dark driveway and does terrible things to them. So I always like go to really dark things and it makes me feel better. So yeah, the world is really almost dystopian right now. So I think that is what's, I think this might be why horror is having a moment, why the crime community is doing better, like the crime writing community, they're doing better than they ever have. You know, there's weirdly a need to see something worse than what you're actually seeing in your real life. It's not healthy, but I think it is what it is.
I was going to say, that sounds like fun. Let's go for ice cream. Let's go for murder.
Let's go for murder. I mean, ideal night would be like, go get some ice cream and then watch a murder documentary.
Well, there you go.
For
you
me.
See, now, here's the clue. You know, you can make...
And wear your 1950s dress. And
well, I do anyway. But
everything's fine.
But you should have like blood red ice cream.
Oh,
create
yes.
some flavors of ice cream, you know, like the Gacy ice cream.
Oh my God, disgusting. That one's a birthday cake flavored, of course.
Of course. But
disgusting. I'm like getting like, I feel like I just got diabetes saying those words. Birthday cake flavored ice cream.
Oh yeah, I tell ya.
But and like the... Like the cherry on top would look like the clown nose.
Bonus clown with bridges. Yeah.
He watches you eat. He paints a picture of
smiling,
you eating your ice
smiling,
cream.
Drooling. Oh, hello, little girl. Oh, this is sick. You know, there've been a dollar round.
What's wrong with you, Alan?
Yes. Anyway, so where do people find you? I know you're hidden out somewhere and. You know, and
yeah, I live at, you know, like they can't actually physically find me because nobody would even be able to see my driveway where up Mike, where I live in this crazy old,
you live in
house.
The old monster house, don't you?
I really do. I mean, it looks a lot like that. It's dark, dark brown. It has a tower that has, you know, it really
does.
You
see it getting cloudy and thunder and rain coming in and, and Jennifer running to the window. Oh, look, it's going to be a beautiful day.
It's going to be a beautiful day today. And I do have a not haunted mannequin that I had set up in my writing tower for a while, like total America, like a total psycho Norman Bates' mom, like put her there in the corner. Cause I wanted like the Amazon delivery drivers to pull up and just be like, what the hell is happening in that house? But then she started freaking me out. So anyways, where you can find me online, the easiest place is my website, which is www.jenniferanngordon.com, and that's Anne with an E, like Anna Green Gables. That has links to all of my social media. I am not active on TikTok.
Okay.
I was like, I just think, I don't know. I think I would be bad at it. Like, I would either take myself too seriously, or it would just turn into... like thousands of videos of me teaching people the Foxtrot Basic. And I don't think,
I think it would work
for my career.
Yeah.
I know I really should, but I don't love social media that much. So every time I have to like add another site, I'm like, oh no. Like I'm not active on whatever Twitter is now, but I am active on Facebook and Instagram, especially if you like pictures of dogs. That's mainly what my Instagram is.
You were going to say dolls.
Oh, there are some mannequin photos and some photos of my, I do own, for some reason I bought a bunch of dollhouses and I thought in all my spare time, I'm going to turn this into like a haunted dollhouse. And now I just have a bunch of dollhouses that are not haunted.
Wow. Not yet.
Yet.
Yeah, not yet.
Give Strange. It time.
Well, there you go. Now everyone, you got to get out and buy the Japanese box. It's the new Jennifer Ann Gordon book. And the reason is the poor girl, she needs you to go out and buy it, okay?
Please. Alms for the poor.
Yeah, she's getting in trouble here.
I'm like a little matchstick girl. She's getting in trouble. But instead it's books.
You know, she wants to quit her job at the Dollarama so that she doesn't have to see Dave every day.
That's right.
He comes in sometimes 3 times a day. Yes. Sometimes. And I'm like, Dave, why do you now smell like milk and cheese? Where did you go for the last 2 hours? And he's like, I was just sitting in my car
in his Pinto,
eating some old Little Caesars pizza in the Pinto, watching Hello Mary Lou Prom Night 2 on my portable DVD player.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know where the milk smell came from. That's just how I smell.
I followed that girl home and...
Anyway. Oh, poor Dave. Dave, you've been a... Poor Dave, you've taken a lot of abuse. And I didn't know that's why you were on
that's
the show.
That's exactly why I'm
on. But Alan messaged me earlier and he's like, oh, Dave is there to be abused. And I'm like, does he like it? And he said, oh. And I was like, all right, I'm super nice, so I don't like to do things like that, but all right.
No, he's got his
everybody has their kinks.
No,
I'm a glutton for punishment.
Yeah, he's got his table out there and he's got his nipple clamps on. Oh, this is terrible. Anyway, well, we appreciate you being here.
Delete everything after everybody's got their kinks.
Well, thank you.
You're like, no, we're opening with that. Opening. That's
usually open with the hard nipples.
That's so the cold open.
Yeah, anyway. Well, Jennifer Ann Gordon, thank you for being here.
Alan R. Warren, thank you for having me. Dollar Store Dave.
Thanks, Jennifer.
Pleasure.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.